Thank you for tuning into the Keto Matrix podcast. In episode 8, Brittany and I have the privilege of speaking with Angela Sharina. We also have the technical difficulties of dealing with Hurricane Florence. So when you listen to this episode, please bear with us, extend some grace, but know there's tons of great information that we did not want to have you lose out on. So there's some commercial breaks and some things to kind of make it a little bit smoother as we patch it up. But we promise, hang in there. We'll never record again anytime around a hurricane. Thank you so much. Let's jump into the episode and enjoy.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com. Now, let's jump into our latest episode.
Hey, Brittany, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good, how are you?
Fantastic. I'd like to point out the fact that I am drinking coffee right now and you're not.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just keep rubbing it in.
Salt, enter wound. Today we have the distinct honor of talking to Angela all the way from Siberia. I wasn't really sure how this was going to work out. I know she lives in New York, but she's visiting family, I believe, in Siberia. And I was like, this is going to be absolutely awesome to really stretch technology and see how it works out. So I will say in advance, if there's any issues with sound quality or, you know, a delay because the voice has to come all the way from Siberia, then that will be why.
Much, though.
No, it doesn't. But in my weird matrix mind, I still think to myself, how in the world can we really connect from so far away and yet be right here in front of each other, even via technology? I think that's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and you know, because I grew up, I remember still the time when we didn't even have cell phones. So, and I remember I was watching Star Trek and they had, you know, those computers on their,
yeah.
And I'm like, I wish I had one, you know, one day. And now, like, I have even better than that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So, it's so funny that you mentioned that. Those are the kind of things that I used to think about as a kid. I'd look at those shows and I'd be like, how is that even possible? Or like the fact that I don't know if you've ever watched Knight Rider, the show with like David Hasselhoff, like way back when with his car Kit.
No, I haven't watched that.
I'm dating myself here. But either way, there was this show and he had this car and the car would talk to him and he could like say different things and the car would respond back. And now to think about the fact that technically our vehicles do that. I mean, they can't like pick us up in front of a restaurant, but if we were to ask Siri a question through our car, it would like totally look it up and give us the answer. Like, that's just, I don't know, mind boggling to me.
Alexa like is my Google now. I'm even lazy to go on Google. I'm like, Alexa, tell me, you know, the weather, or tell me this, or tell me that.
Like, it's so fascinating, but it's also funny that we are living in a world where we have more access to information than ever before, and yet I feel like people are more ignorant now than they've ever been. So it's weird.
Because, like, for example, if you take diet, right, there is so much information, and you can probably find confirmation to almost any theory or any opinion out there. And that's why, you know, people are getting confused, like, so what's right? What's wrong? What do I do at the end of the day?
That's very true. But for the sake of this podcast, everything that we are saying is absolutely correct. So there's no room for error or for anyone else to think otherwise. So we'll go with that. No, but I think you're absolutely right, especially when it comes to some of the new things that are kind of trending that people are like, oh, you should try this and try that. And they haven't really been around that long, or people just don't understand them and, you know, or doing them incorrectly. And so one of the biggest things I think for me is having these podcasts to be able to bring out the basis of understanding based on the scientific and the practical approach for what really makes sense, not just something that sounded really cool. Like, yeah, net carb. If you have ice cream and followed up with Metamucil fiber, you'll be absolutely fine. Like, that's not how that works. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you are extremely healthy and fit. I feel like you are one of those anomalies. Like, you've been healthy like your entire life. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right, but I consider it more of a luck because I was born in a family. My father used to work as a physical training teacher, and I was born in Siberia in Russia, and we never really had McDonald's when I was growing up, for example, you know, or any substantial amount of processed food. everything was cooked at home. Our, you know, animals and any kind of food source was not treated with all these chemicals and preservatives and all that stuff. So that kind of like was given to me. I never knew different when I was growing up. And then by the time I grew up and the world changed, you know, food industry changed and everything, I was kind of like, because I also read a lot, I was too smart to even like go to McDonald's, you know, and eat there on a regular basis. And it wasn't ever like part of Russian culture. You know, if you compare, for example, Eastern European Russian culture to US and Western European, it was still more of like family oriented, where like every meal is circled. I don't know, every meal, you know, is preferred to have at the table with the family, home cooked. It's processed food is not, like, nobody really loves processed food, but, you know, not something that people talk about.
No, that's a good point. And you know what's funny is one of the things that was so exciting to me to have you on was the fact that you are not, like, you're not born and raised in New York or in the United States for that matter. And from everything that I've learned about your background from listening and reading up on you, like, you are well traveled. And I would definitely say shout out to my parents. That was probably one of the best things that they could ever do for us growing up, was that we did get to get out of the United States quite a bit. And that really exposed us to understanding everything outside of what we thought was normal, you know, McDonald's and Burger King and processed everything. We used to go to Barbados a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of the funniest things is that no matter what, whenever we would go, we would eat twice as much as we would eat in the States, and we'd always lose weight. And I think that speaks a lot to the quality of the food and the lack of the chemicals and a lack of the processed foods that we would consume. Like, it was really all whole food options. And if you could do me a favor, I know that living in New York, it's like the complete polar opposite, right? Like, you could get absolutely anything you wanted at any time. Can you kind to talk to how that is for you? And when you look around, I feel awful sometimes when I'm like at the airport or one of those places where you're like watching all these people stuff things in their mouth at like odd hours for no reason. How does that feel? I mean, like, what is your intake on that?
As for Warren, this is our first commercial break. I wanted to take the time to say, go to theketomatrix.com and check out the affiliates page. The affiliates page will be up to date with all suggested items and things that we utilize along our keto journey to get the best out of it. And hey, guess what? If there's a link, that means there's a discount code. So go there, find the value, see the things that we're using to keep us on the straight and narrow, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Having said that, you were mentioning and talking until we got rudely interrupted about the fact that you were too smart based on the information and the insights that you had. And that's kind of like the recap on processed foods. And then I asked you to kind of provide your insight into how it looks to be here, like in the States, where people are constantly having access to horrible food quality and horrible processed foods in comparison to kind of how you grew up with whole foods as options.
Brittany.
Yeah, you guys swap sides on the Skype thing, so either way, it's okay. This is Friday Eve. It's my favorite day.
Well, my input would... It's kind of weird for me that in U.S. A lot of people eat food that I wouldn't consider food, like you know, all the packaged foods that treated with, again, chemicals, preservatives that I wouldn't eat like at all. Like, I don't even consider it food. I consider it more of like entertainment. You know, if you're eating healthy diet and sometimes you want something, I don't know, fun or want to experiment, you could try that. But in US, a lot of people think that, for example, cereal eats food and it can be breakfast. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, like for me, it's like dessert or sweets.
Or something that's just not food or recognizable as food at all.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like what they call food-like substances. It's like you can eat it, you can chew it, you know, it goes through your body, through your digestive system, but it's not nourishing. Like, it doesn't give anything to your body except for, like, calories.
That's, you know, so, what, that's such a good perspective. whenever I define calories for people, and then I'm talking about like calories as a source of energy, because that's what it actually is, right? Like it's the amount of heat or energy generated by fuel. And I always reference wood. I'm like, wood could have a caloric count if we could digest it, right? Like you could burn it, light it on fire, and find out like the amount of energy produced from it. And I think that that's a really good point, that we do eat a lot of stuff here that technically by definition we could chew it and we could swallow it and it could go through our body, but there's actually not nourishment from it, and yet we still consider it a food group, like cereal, which I will say, shout out to, you know, Oreos and Lucky Charms and Cocoa Puffs and all those things that I don't eat anymore but still love. But yeah, you're right. And what would you think about, like, I don't know, Kashi-Goline or those cereals that are healthy in terms of like actually providing nourishment?
You know, I guess it depends on the brand and the quality. Okay. And I'm not sure about, like, I personally do not eat any grains, right? I do not consider that to be human food for many different reasons. Just
Give us a few, because I feel like that's one of those things that I've been preaching to the choir. And even, I mean, I know the paleo and all these different name diets are out, right? But why don't you eat grain? And did you grow up eating grains at all? Or is that something that...
The only grains that were, like, cooked in our family were buckwheat, that is seed, really not a grain. And in the morning we would eat oatmeal, you know, some mornings, not every morning, but and that's about it. And bread, of course, you know, bread. Russian people love bread, but I stopped eating bread when I was 11 or 12. I think just by like naturally, I don't know, I never felt good after eating it. And I always felt like kind of like sluggish and bloated. So I'm like, you know, not the best food. So at some point I just stopped eating it.
I just want to point out that it's not Russian people that like bread. It's everybody that likes bread. I feel like that's like... Everyone loves bread.
And I think, you know, like, actually bread can be, it can be made healthier when it's made traditionally, meaning using the bacteria that eats the sugars, that eats all the, you know, that eats a lot of the carbs that produce certain protein and nutritive compounds, that can be actually not that bad for digestive system, and in normal amounts it can be actually healthy for some people. It depends. So sourdough, you know, might be good, but me personally, I don't eat it. And again, you know, with a lot of foods, it's not only the kind of foods, but also how they are processed and how they are cooked. For example, you know, quinoa.
I said agreed completely.
Yeah, so for example, quinoa, right? It has lectins, or those plant proteins that can interfere with our digestive system, that can trigger our immune system. But if you cook, for example, if you soak them and cook in pressure cooker, then most of them are destroyed, and they're not as detrimental to people's health as when you just boil them, for example, right? The same goes for bread. Again, like, you can, you know, do sourdough, you can do make it traditionally, or you can make it like big corporations make it, and that's like complete garbage.
I think
that's like, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that's absolutely, I mean, these are points where I think that some of the confusion comes in, right? So obviously this is a keto podcast, and I think that when we talk keto and we look at why there are a million different versions that people have kind of called keto, and it really does come down to a good, better, best, right? Like, there's people that'll say, oh yeah, well, I do keto, but I make, you know, fat bombs all the time with all these different sugar substitutes. And then you have people that say, oh well, you know, I do keto and I try to keep it to salads and a ton of meats, but they're like more on the vegetable aspect of things than others. And then you have, you know, other aspects of keto where it's strictly more of a paleolithic approach, where it's only whole foods eaten in the ratios that we would know, where fat is the most important macronutrient we put in. And I think that those are the things where
if people understood and had a better idea of the process of how things were made, what the processing looked like, yes, for sure, here in the United States, even if your budget only allowed you to have, I don't know, hamburgers and hot dogs and you didn't eat the buns and that was it because that's all you could afford, do I think you could allow your body to run on ketones and experience those benefits? For sure. But would I say that getting to the point where you were really properly looking at organic sourced grass-fed grass-finished items, where you approached it with like an awful type thought process and, you know, nose to tail eating and organ meats and getting really all of your micronutrients up and balanced, do I think that that's a better and a best approach? Absolutely, for sure. And I think that that's where some of the confusion lies. A lot of people, I think, here specifically have looked to keto for more of a, you know, I want to lose 20 pounds so that I could look a little bit better, instead of looking at how they could really become the best version of themselves health-wise, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, internally, all the way around. And I think that that's the thing for us here that may be the most challenging, right? Because here in the United States, I feel like more than anywhere else, we have been more emotionally set on food than looking at food as a fuel source and a nourishment to our body and recognizing the importance of how it plays into our health and wellness. Would you agree with that? I mean, I feel like other cultures, for the most part, they still celebrate with food, but they do it in such a different way, right? Like, I don't know. I picture other cultures coming together to eat where everyone has kind of helped in cooking and preparing, and that aspect of it alone, though it's still whole food items, has a bond to it. Almost like our Thanksgiving in the United States, which that's a whole other story. We won't get into the politics of Thanksgiving, but looking at that, where people come around to make whole food options and not like, yeah, guys, let's take out these Hostess cupcakes that were made 18 months ago. I don't know. I just feel like those are the kind of things that separate and change, and maybe why it's so difficult. Because I still feel like people look at keto and they think it's so extreme, and it's really not extreme. It's just a perception based on our altered, you know, point of view from how we grew up and what we've seen.
Well, I guess I just want to, you know, say a little bit about how we, yeah, celebrate with food. We Russian, you know, Russian people, for example, love food. And we love celebrating with food and making kind of like feasts. But you're right. It's all about, you know, cooking together. You know, I have a sister. She is 5 years older. And, you know, father, mother. And whenever it's a big holiday and we are together, you know, in the same location, we always get together. Like, for example, every New Year, we make these dumplings, you know, and we get a bunch of meat, you know, and a certain kind of dough. We also make it all by hands, and then we make a huge, like a whole bunch of them to eat the whole holiday. That's what we used to do when we all, you know, were in the same city. And we cook a lot of other dishes from scratch, buying fresh ingredients, like, you know, the best quality. And that's what most Russian people do. People buy fresh, good quality ingredients and then cook home-cooked meals and then invite each other for dinners or lunches or whatever it is, you know, during the holiday season. And people try to eat as many meals as they can together. And home-cooked meals are always like preferred. And it's still in Russia kind of like tradition when you're choosing, for example, when a guy choosing a wife, he's always kind of like trying to see if she can cook or not, you know, that.
I'm laughing because I feel like that's the same here, Brittany. Hold on, let me say this. Brittany would know more than I would. I've been out of the dating scene for quite some time, and I happen to cook really, really well. But, Brittany, would you say that that's true? Wait, are you shaking your head because I don't cook well?
No, I'm shaking my head because you said that, like, that I would know on the dating scene, and I haven't really been on the dating scene in a while, but
I mean, you've been on the dating scene more recently than I have.
So I mean, I think it's something that is thought of, like, I mean, traditionally people make the joke of like, can they cook or can they, but I feel like more and more, because of the convenience of what is out there, it's not necessarily as quote sought after of a thing. Like there are certain people in their personality, like if that's important to them, they will, but I don't know that it's as traditionally a like expectation.
Maybe more so now than it was, or like before more than now.
I guess. Yeah. Now it's so like previously, I think it was like, can she cook? Can she like, can she keep house? And now it's that like, I don't think it's thought after that often, except for in more traditional families.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah. That's probably accurate. Yeah, I'd say that.
Again, because it's just so much more accepted to order pizza and pick it up on the way home versus like grabbing McDonald's or going out, as opposed like that's kind of almost the expectation is that you're going to be eating on the run so often in America, I think, that finding someone who even has like even if they can cook, finding someone who has time to sit down and prepare a home cooked meal is fewer and farther between.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's like one of the problems in the world with healthy eating. Like for me, every meal should be fresh, and fresh means just cooked. You know, I don't even like to reheat my food. That's why I always cook my food. And that's, you know, where you get the most nutrition, because the more you store food, the less nutrients there are, no matter what quality of that food. And because people now eat like further and further from the moment to eat the food and, I don't know, produce in any way, it's also a lot of people get less and less nutrition. And that's why also, you know, people always like craving something hungry because there is so much less nutrition in what they eat.
That is so true. You sounded really far away, by the way. I'm not sure. You don't look like you've moved anywhere, but you sounded like you were in Siberia.
Yeah, I think there is some like connection, I don't know, interference.
Listen, we just throwing this out to everyone else. So we usually run on cable at 300 plus megabytes per second as far as like internet speed, right? And I have this really great setup with my mic and the whole nine yards. Right now we are running on AT&T's mobile 4G LTE and and my headphones that conveniently came out. So I will totally take the blame for all of this. And if, just complete transparency here, I'm sure the listeners are like, this is fantastic. My wife, I totally allow her to sleep. Whenever she wakes up because she doesn't sleep the best. But I did, however, wake her up and say, listen, call whoever you need to call and ask them when her power is going to be back. So she was thrilled with the fact that I woke her up and I was like, and it wasn't even more so for this. Like I have, I breed, train and raise police canines and it's hot in North Carolina. And so I have an air conditioning system that runs to keep the building cool. But if they don't have the power up within a certain period of time, I have to make alternate arrangements for the dogs because they can't like sit and be hot. So I'm like, yeah, I need to find those things out. So having said that, I just think it's hilarious that life happens. So for everyone that's listening right now, this is one of those life happens moments. Saying that though, I do feel like we have missed a large amount of even understanding that. We were just having the conversation, my wife and I yesterday, about not having a microwave. So we bought a new house, we have a house, and we don't have a microwave in it, which is something that we didn't realize until after we moved in. And yesterday we realized that we really didn't miss it because we really only do cook whole foods and we cook what we're gonna eat and that's it. But we were thinking, mm-hmm. if we had guests that came over, would they think we were absolutely insane because we don't have a microwave and don't really need one? And the first person that'll probably be here will be Brittany whenever she comes to visit. And I was like, I guess she'll be okay with it because we don't have one. And I don't think that people recognize, like, the more you reheat something, the further away from when it was actually killed, for those that eat meat, because I think we all love meat that are on here, right? Like, between that period in time and the length that you wait to reheat it or eat it later, like, you are losing valuable nutrition. I think about reheating a steak and losing the juice in it, and I'm just like, no, I want that fat, the oil, yeah. Like, that's goodness being missed. So that's a really good point. That's not even something I think I talk about, so kudos to that, because that's so true.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't talk about that, you know, and the people think those are small details, but a lot of vitamins and minerals, they're heat sensitive, light sensitive, and oxygen sensitive. So if you keep it out for, you know, even a few hours, that, you know, from the beginning when you started cooking till like that moment that you start eating, a lot of nutrition can like just not be there anymore. And it's very important, you know. What I also like always try to teach, you know, people who work with us is like, yeah, fat, you know, proteins, carbs, it's all like important, the energy. But what's more important and what people like not thinking about that much is those like vitamins and minerals that body actually needs for survival. And if, you know, people not getting them, then they start craving things all the time. And that's where a lot of, you know, hunger and just cravings for stuff comes, not necessarily because they need more energy or food of any kind.
That is so true. So one of the things that I feel like with everything that you're saying, which I think is great, I feel like you're probably really tuned into how your body feels. Actually, I'm lying. I know you are, because you posted a video on your IG. My days are all blended together, but you were talking about how you felt like you were low in potassium.
You
went on this search for like mushrooms and spinach. And I was like, that's exactly like, okay. So I have a lot of clients that will tell me, oh my gosh, I'm sick of tracking macros and I just want to eat intuitively. And I am not opposed to people that want to eat intuitively. I like to, based on my life being crazy, like to have macros set, because then I know no matter how I may emotionally be feeling and what hormonal response I may be having to the stress of life, that if I ate the macros I had scheduled, that I got the fuel I needed, period. However, I also recognize that some people, they don't want to do that. They don't feel like they're slaves to putting in their information and whatever. But I feel like if they haven't gotten to the point where they are understanding how they're supposed to feel, because we've been metabolically damaged for so long, then it's really hard to get to the point where you know what you're missing. So I thought it was so awesome that you were like, yeah, I'm low on potassium right now and I need to find some potassium rich items. How do you relate to how you're feeling? Obviously you do your meditations twice a day, but are you throughout the day kind of like checking in on yourself saying, hey, you know, I feel like I need a little bit more of this, or you're in Siberia, are you doing anything to keep like sunlight up? Is it sunny there right now? Like your vitamin D and those kind of things, like how do you keep track of, you know, where you're at and where you feel like you need a little bit more or less of something?
Well, the most important, I guess, metrics for me is my energy levels, right? So when I wake up, I start working out, I start working. And if at some point I feel like I just don't have the drive to do anything, you know, even if I like doing something, you know, it's like you're getting lazy. And that means that your body like needs something. Either your brain like doesn't have the fuel or something else, or your body doesn't have that. And that's how I know that I'm missing something. And then I'm like, am I thirsty? Did I move today? Like when it comes to vitamin D, especially, you know, when I'm Siberia or in places where it's cold climate, I go to tanning booths and I make sure that I get UVB and UVA, you know, most of it UVB, but also UVA. So it's kind of like a mix radiation. Okay. And what helps with vitamin D, plus I make sure I eat things like livers or, you know, that also has like vitamin A or like caviar and the like organ meats that has, you know, some vitamin D, some vitamin A, like a lot of nutrition. But I really, you know, feel like sometimes I miss the electrolyte part because I eat very little plants, you know, and animal foods, they have potassium, for example, right, and magnesium, but sometimes it's harder to get, especially if you're not eating variety all the time. So on those items, like, they really affect my energy levels, and I either, like, you know, get additional supplement or just make sure that I include specifically, you know, I consciously design my menu so I get certain, you know, nutrition like potassium or magnesium or calcium or like phosphorus or iodine. So it's somewhere there in my diet. And then, yeah, of course, vitamin, like, you know, vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin C, B vitamins, not a problem usually on keto diet because, I mean, you're eating so many animal
Right. Huh? I said, yeah, because you're eating meat, and so there's a lot in that. It's so funny. You're going through this list of vitamins, and I'm sure people are writing them down. Like, okay, cool. And then the next thing they're going to do is open up their web browser and figure out if Vitamin Shoppe or Amazon can get them all these vitamins. And I know that because when I'm having these conversations, that's exactly what people are doing. And my thought process is, no, you don't need to take a vitamin supplement. You need to look at what are the foods that you're eating to make sure those micronutrients are in. And that, again, I think is one of those, like, understanding the whole foods, understanding what vitamins are in what whole foods, and then how to apply that based on, you know, what your needs are. And I think energy is a really, I think that's a really good parameter to kind of gauge where you're at. I think I need to do that even more so, you know, as far as like how I'm feeling when, because I don't think I do that enough. I pay attention more to, you know, my muscle cramping, clarity of thought, my cognitive function. But I think because I'm typically high energy, even if I'm tired, I don't listen to, you know, is this real or, you know, artificial energy that I'm creating? Because, you know, like, I know I have things I need to get done, or am I just really there? So that's enlightening. I love that. I love that insight. That's fantastic. Brady, what are you thinking right now? I feel like these are what you're like, man, I know I need to do this, or I need to change that.
That right now is kind of a low point in my life for keto. So I'm listening and I'm taking it in. But honestly, I don't have a whole lot. I don't know. I'm doing just a lot of processing right now.
Yeah. I was going to say, so like, and having knowing like where you are with things, I think it's, I don't know. I always feel like it's apropos with the guests that we come on and you guys sharing the stories that you have to be able to relate to where people are along their like ketogenic or forget ketogenic. Let's just say their journey to health and wellness and unlocking new parameters and things that they weren't necessarily aware of before. Right. So listening to understanding the foods and the whole food choices and the options and the preparation and the timeframes to all the things that we can be lacking and not receiving based on those things. Like you said earlier, like those small details, they may seem really small, but they're so important in the grand scheme of how they actually impact us. And, you know, I was joking about the technology and how cool it is to be able to talk to you from Siberia. But at the same time, I think that those little things are what keep me going, right? Like, it's like, oh, I feel this kind of way and I felt like I've had a headache for the last couple of days. To me, it's like, ooh, wow, cool, why? Like what's changed and what impacts or what are you doing or not doing? You know, what are the protein sources? What are the reasons that we feel the way that we feel? And then recognizing that we're completely empowered to adjust those things when we lean into them and pay attention to what they are. I just think that's just so fascinating to me. I think that we don't credit the human body with the complexity, yet the amazingness that it is. And how much we can control how it feels by what we put in it. I don't know. That's amazing to me.
No, exactly. You know, like, that's why I also love tracking things, because, you know, when you track things and you know what you're doing, then when something is off, you're like, okay, so what have I been doing that, you know, now I feel that way? And a lot of times if you track things, if you know, write things down, you can actually figure it out and change the way you feel. And it's really powerful. Like, you can take the power of changing the way you feel back, you know, into your arms instead of just hoping to feel good every day.
Man, that is so profound. That needs to go on like a billboard. I think you're absolutely right. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why I'm so big into tracking. You know, it's really like, for instance, I know that if I'm eating 78% or higher of fat, where my energy is and what my brain is like when I wake up the day after. Like, I just know where that is, that 78. And I also know that I change dramatically when I'm between the 80 and the 82 mark. That's come from being able to like journal and look at the intake and the input and how my body responds to it. And so I feel like those things are lost. I'm like, if you're not tracking, how do you know? Especially since it's so individual. I mean, I'm not gonna respond the same way you are and vice versa. So the only way for you to have that empowerment over your body is to put that information in and then be able to go back and recall and look at it and say, oh, okay, well, I need to make these adjustments. So that's so huge. So kind of walk me through, what do you do I know like you're creating yourself and I know that you train and help other people, you know, become better versions of themselves. How did you kind of get into that stuff? And what does your day to day look like as far as like helping clients and people embrace those things?
Well, right now my day is a little bit different because I'm in Siberia. Exactly right. But usually, for example, in New York, I would wake up, I would go train. It's usually pretty early, like 5:30 in the morning. And then I would probably have a couple of clients that I also train. And then I would work on my content to probably, I don't know, like for 5-6 hours or so. And then I would have my lunch or something. And then usually at night, I would train more people. And I don't know, maybe if I don't have many clients at night, I just do like networking event or go and explore something, go listen to some lecture or read a book, you know, take a course online. I'm like, I'm always trying to, I don't know, do something, learn something, experiment with something. And how I got into that, I actually, you know, I finished degree in Siberia, computer science, and I worked as a computer science for like 6 months or so. But again, like since I was really young, I was training either athletics group or dancing or something else. My father, you know, would train me every day, and training was always part of me. And I would teach classes at school, like aerobics and stuff. So it was always like a part of my life, but somewhere at the background. So I finished university, like computer programming, and then I realized I don't really want to do it. Like I cannot sit in front of the computer on a stage and like have that as my main activity, like, you know, for my life. So I'm like, I'm just going to go back to what I love doing most. That was, you know, training, nutrition. And I got into nutrition also because I had a condition called vitiligo. It's autoimmune condition, as they know now. So I also studied nutrition. And again, after like I finished my degree, I got certified as personal trainer and nutritionist and started, you know, getting clients and work in the gym as a fitness instructor, as a personal trainer, a nutritionist. I also was in sales. And,
so you've done nothing then?
Then, yeah, I mean, I did quite a few things, you know, and then I started traveling and I traveled for almost like 6 years in Southeast Asia, Latin America and Middle East, doing the same thing, basically training people and helping people to get healthy or lose weight, or working for some hotels or resorts doing the same kind of thing. So, and then when I realized what I wanted to do in my life and what was my mission, I moved to New York and started working on that. And
so what is your mission?
I want to transform food industry and the way people treat food, the way people eat. Like, I want to be a part of that movement. Of course, I'm not going to be the only one, you know, it's like too big of a job.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out in this part of the episode and giving us the grace necessary for the technical issues we had for this podcast episode. I will say one of the things I'd like everyone to do, if you haven't done so already, if you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/groups/The Keto Matrix. This is a support group and actually the thing that got it all started. The Keto Matrix was grown out of just helping people and getting information out. There are a ton of videos. There are a ton of amazing people that are help sharing their journey, what they've done, and how they can help others. Join the group, request to jump in. And guys, let's listen to the rest of this episode. It's been jam-packed with great information. And I think you'll find the third and last installment of this is just as great. Thank you so much for bearing with us. And I promise the next time we have a hurricane, we'll take a couple days off. Let's jump back into the episode. I'm back. I don't know what happened. It said the connection was lost. One of the things that I was going to ask you as you were talking about really like changing like the food industry and people's outlook on it, and that it wasn't a one person job, which is totally true. What do you think are like the biggest challenges? Like, where do you think we should start? Where should people first go when they're like, you know what, I'm tired of feeling horrible and I want to make a change? What do you think is like the first thing that they should do other than throw out all the food that's in their pantry?
The first, I mean, When it comes to food industry, I believe the most important thing is education and making sure people understand what healthy diet or healthy eating is all about. Because I ask a lot of people, and people don't even know what is healthy food anymore. For a lot of people, it's a particular diet, or it's counting calories, or something else. So people don't understand anymore what healthy food is actually is, and what food is, you know, compared to food like products. So I believe like educating people is like the first priority. And then people need to start demanding better quality. So when you go to the store, don't agree to buy, well, not don't agree, but choose the products and producers that might be, you know, a little bit more expensive, but that make better food and better products. Because when we demand better quality, the industry will respond with better quality. And when it comes to, you know, like eating healthy in general, is first thing, you gotta get rid of all the processed foods. And by processed, I mean like added sugars, added preservatives, added like chemicals that belong to some, you know, science lab, not something you find in someone's kitchen. But literally, like there are ingredients on the ingredient list that you wouldn't buy for your kitchen to cook with, then you shouldn't buy that product because why would you like have it in your food?
Okay, so I want you to elaborate on that, because I feel like that's one of the things that a lot of people miss out on. Even, I mean, you've seen our grocery stores, right? Like even in our grocery stores, if we were like, oh, I'm gonna go buy dry seasoning, and they look on the back of the dry seasoning and there are more chemically pronounced words on that dry seasoning than things that you can recognize, like paprika and green pepper, onion and celery. Like, okay, fine, you want to use those things, that's okay. But some of the monosorbates and the ascorbics, like those things that shouldn't be on there, the maltodextrin that people feel is need, like, whatever, they shouldn't be listed. And I don't think that people recognize that. So can you kind of walk us through what is, you made a post and you were talking along the lines of whole food eating and only using like herbs and spices for seasoning. Walk through like what that looks like, because break that down. I don't think people recognize some of the garbage that we have in our seasonings and stuff like that. How does that look for you? And is it different in Siberia? Like how do you guys have that? Like what's the processing like there?
Well, we don't add as many preservatives and additives, but still there are just, you know, when you look at the ingredient lists of food, like, so there is, for example, if I buy salmon, right, in a can, then there should be like salmon, salt, water, and that's it, you know. Or if they decide to add some seasonings or herbs, then maybe pepper, or, you know, something else, things that you would understand. And if there is something like, I don't remember like what they put it there, but if there is something that you're wondering, you don't understand that it's, and where it sounds again like some chemical term, then don't buy that, because it doesn't belong to your item and it's probably used to preserve. But like, why would you want to buy food that is supposed to be on the shelf like forever?
True story. That's very powerful. I like that.
But yeah, for me it's really, you know, simple. Again, like it's not really a, basically, if there is like food in the ingredient list, then you buy it. And if it's something that is not food item, then don't buy it, because like it doesn't belong.
Okay, so Brittany, Angela, I'm going to add you to, I have to, and I hope you're okay with this. I'm going to add you to a group I have on Facebook. It's called the Keto Matrix. It's a Facebook group. You are saying these things so simplistically, like, hey, if it's got this, then don't. And if it doesn't, then okay. Right? That seems so simple. However, Brittany knows, because I know when Brittany started keto, she'd send me these things that were like keto-fied items. And she'd say, hey, what about this? And then she'd look at it and she'd be like, I don't understand. And I think that you and I, Angela, will look at something that's like, this is common sense almost. But why is it so complicated? Because people truly will look at something and they don't understand why that's not something they should eat. And I'm just like, you can't even pronounce the word. Like, why would you think that that's something you should put in your body?
Yeah, and that's, you know, the main criteria, exactly. You know, if you can't pronounce it, if you can't recognize it. You know, Michael Pollan has this book, Food Rules, and he's like, don't eat anything that your grandmother wouldn't recognize, and that's probably true.
You know? Who is it, Michael Pollan?
Pollan. Yeah, Michael Pollan is one of the, you know, best like food writers, food advocates. He has also this documentary Cooked and I think a couple of others. So
we'll have to, I'm going to try to link that in the show notes because that's awesome. What other good books do you have out there that you think people should read that will help educate them and empower them to be better?
Food Rules is, you know, it's general rules about eating food, not food-like substances. I mean, I'm reading books all the time. So, for example, a recent one was really, like, cool for me that it made me think in a different way about food. It's called The Dorito Effect, and it's about how...
I love Doritos. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, but the book talks about this concept that in nature, every flavor is designed to guide us through nutrition compounds of foods. Meaning, you know, if berries, for example, have similar taste, you know, kind of like sour with different variations, you know, it tells our body that in this particular food, there is like vitamin C and, you know, thousands of other like plant compounds. So different foods have different flavors because they have different nutrition. What happened with food industry, they created a lot of different flavorings, but there is no nutrition assigned to it. And what happened to our brain is before it used to have a map. So if this tastes like this, then nutrition content of this is that. So whenever our body was missing something, it would crave certain flavor. Whereas now, because flavors are not related to any nutrition, you know, compounds in processed foods, the brain is really confused. It's like, I need that nutrition, but I don't know where to get it because there are so many flavors, but they're not really connected to any nutrition. So the book is all about that. And it really made me think why a lot of people find it difficult to eat intuitively, because they eat so many processed foods, and that map in their brain of flavor plus nutrition is really messed up.
Wow, that is that's huge. I think that's, I'm very seldomly am I caught in a point where I'm actually processing where that makes so much sense. And this is one of those moments where I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely true. I think that that's one of those things where, and I don't know if you follow total carbs or net carbs, but I know for a lot of clients, I'm a total carbs kind of person because they're just a macronutrient I know I don't need. But I also tell those people that especially have been like metabolically damaged for a long time, that they're hurting themselves and being able to get rid of the cravings for those said items. That if you're eating, let's say 50 grams of net carbs, even if it's just green leafy vegetables, that's fine. You still have such a high carb intake in comparison that you're still going to wind up craving those cakes and process things because the maps in their brain are still so jacked up that your brain hasn't processed the fact that, oh yeah, it's kale. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that you're having that much carb still and those cravings are still being cultivated and kept around from those things. So I think that that's huge. Like, our mapping is so far off from what it should or could be. Also, just as a reference point, I have no idea where we've been at as far as time because I keep recording this in parts. So this could be like a 3-hour long podcast. And so in respecting Brittany and Angela, your time, just realize that we can end this whenever. I don't want you guys to feel like I'm holding you hostage on here to talk about this. But at the same time, like, these are really great nuggets. I think that that's absolutely huge. And more people need to kind of look into that. So the Dorito Effect, do you know who wrote that?
It's actually on my blog, Create Yourself That Today. It's the last post I did. It's a blog post for the book, yeah. Because I don't always remember all the authors, but the book is amazing. You know, I love these kinds of books that makes you think like differently, and you like realize that this is true, and you know, and after that, like, everything kind of changes for you. So for me, that was that moment.
No, that's awesome. It's so, like, and I don't know if I shared this with you or not in our emails, but so, like, the Keto Matrix, the whole reason I came up with that. Did you ever see the movie The Matrix, by the way?
Okay. Sure.
So, all right. So I always think about, you know, when Neo had the choice, right, to take the red pill or the blue pill, and the fact that it didn't matter, everything that they could expose him to and share with him couldn't happen until he made the decision to think and open his mind to those things. And I feel like for nutrition, until we make the decision to be open to all the things that we thought we've known but didn't know, then we never can really embrace and understand the things that are coming in. And so that's why this is the Keto Matrix, because I really feel like people need to make the decision to learn things that they thought they already knew and relearn and reopen and recommit themselves to identifying all the things that have been off for so long. And the more we can do that, the better we are to recognize and grow through the learning process that is nutrition and health and wellness.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I believe that's true for any learning, you know, until you're kind of ready to give up what you already know and accept that you might be completely wrong. there is like no chance you can learn something new. You know, there is also like a moment in the movie Avatar about how they agreed to, have you seen the movie Avatar?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. So, and they decided to teach this guy, the you know, who didn't have any trainings, exactly because like his head was what they had, you know, empty. So his cup was completely empty, and they could put any knowledge into that. So, and for me, you know, like I used to be raw vegan for 4 years, and I know what it like feels like completely relearning your like belief system and completely learning like new eating habits and everything. And I believe that's why you also should experiment all the time to kind of learn what's best for you, what diet works best. Or
let's talk about that for a second, because I know that there's actually a handful of people in my mind right now that are vegans. And I have more than a few clients where I've said, listen, if you want to be a vegan and eat ketogenically, you can still do it. It's challenging, but it's still possible. But I know for a fact that you still miss out on some nutritional things by not eating animals, right? Why did you go raw vegan? And what would you say to that person that's on the fence of ever changing that?
Why I went raw vegan, I think it was mostly something, it was a thing that I wanted to try. It also was the time when I moved to Thailand. So a lot of people there, they eat a lot of fruit, they eat plant-based, and I got and I got fired there. I got into this movement, and you know, all the explanations didn't have that much information, like, and it sounds so like crazy. Like none other animal eats, or what else? Like we are like more like, you know, like monkeys when it comes to a digestive system. But again, all the gut, and you know, the diet is kind of like cleansing. Also, when you start doing that, you feel light, you feel a lot of energy, because your body does not spend much energy digesting, because especially if you eat a lot of fruits, fruits are really easy to digest. That one thing I would give for fruit, you know, they go through your stomach on like in 15-20 minutes, really. And that's why you feel a lot of energy at first, you know. And it's a lot of hydration, a lot of water. But then after a while, you usually start missing a lot of vital nutrients, like again, B vitamins, also protein. You're protein deficient usually, and like without supplements, it's almost impossible to sustain. And then I also started learning about how our digestive really works. And they like to say, like raw vegans, that humans are the only animals who cook their food. Like it's something wrong with that. But then I like to say these days, well, humans are the only animals who build cities and go to space. It has something to do with
that. It's because they weren't vitamin deficient, you know.
And actually, you know, I also read quite a few books on nutrition and evolution of our brain specifically, and that we were able to afford that brain that eats, you know, 25% of our energy because we started eating cooked food, and that our digestive system actually evolved on cooked food. So we are not like, you know, vegetarians or vegans, we are not carnivorous, but we're like omnivorous and mostly suited for cooked food. So for example, if you put a person on raw food diet, they would lose weight just because they wouldn't be able to get the same amount of nutrition from foods, because when we cook, we make a lot of nutrients more available for our energy and, you know, other needs. So, like, I just learned more and kind of, like, I also developed a lot of cravings and deficiencies, and I got out of it after 4 years.
What would you say to that vegan? I know there's a lot of vegans listening that are, you know, they're only vegan because they feel bad for animals. You know, like they don't like the process.
That's also really funny, kind of, because now I know that you see, like, now there are a lot of studies that plants feel. They may not communicate as, like, animals. They may not lead, but they have
Wait, I can't hear what you're saying. You went totally mute for that second, and it was right at the time that I knew you were about to say something life-changing. So plants, yeah, I can hear you now. You said plants feel, and then you were about to explain why they feel, and then it was like, I feel like it's a conspiracy, and people are trying to filter you out, because they're like, no, don't let them know. It's a secret.
No, but, you know, now there is a whole, like, field of science that research plants, and that plants release certain chemicals to communicate to each other and other parts of themselves when they're being eaten or being hurt, or there is some danger in the environment. So when vegans say that, you know, you're hurting animals or you're taking their life, I'm like, what about millions of plants that you're taking life? You know, they don't want to die either. You know, they alive, they procreate, they breathe. I'm like, everything eats something.
I like it. That's good. Oh my goodness. I'm going to put that on a shirt. I probably say that on every podcast. Someone says something, I'm like, that needs to go on a shirt. But I really want to do something like plants cry too, eat a steak. Like,
yeah, but that's true. You know, just because it's also, you know, so when any kind of life form is really different from ourselves, we tend to not make it, I don't know, have a soul or give it feelings. So plant just different life forms that are really unlike us. And that's why for, you know, vegans, it's easier to say that, you know, it's okay to eat plants, but not okay to eat animals. But it's all life, you know, the same as like bacteria on everything. You kill at something every day, no matter what you do. Like,
man, that's true. That's so true. This is the conclusion of our episode. Thank you absolutely so much for hanging in there and giving us grace with the technical difficulties this round. We promise the next time we will not try to record in and or around any hurricanes. In the meantime, though, guys, stay keto and remember, if you free your mind, you will change your life. This is not the easiest thing in the world to do, but it is definitely one of the most life impacting. Thank you so much for being the best part. Please remember to like, review, and share. And yes, we will definitely get Angela back on so we can uncover more of that information she was sharing. Until then, guys, stay keto and thank you so much.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com.